Famous for their iconic Humboldt fog, inspired by the misty Humboldt County coastline, Cypress Grove has been a cornerstone of American cheese for over 40 years. Their range of fresh, soft-ripened, and aged goat cheeses promises an unforgettable experience. Proudly crafted in Arcata, California, where the redwoods meet the Pacific Ocean, Cypress Grove cheeses are available nationwide at specialty retailers. Discover their cheeses, serving tips, and even order online at cypressgrovecheese.com. Perfect for any occasion or as a gift. There's nothing like that Humboldt fog feeling.
Down to business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland
on News Talk.
First up, we'll take a look at the business stories that are making this morning's and indeed the weekend newspapers. Joining me this morning are Linda Daly, business reporter with the Sunday Times, and indeed Stephen O'Leary, the founder of Alitico. You're both very welcome to the programme. Stephen, we might start with you. Top donors pile pressure on Biden to quit the race. This is a bit of a horror show, a slow motion car crash. But what's your take on all the comment across the newspapers on Biden this morning?
Yeah, all the newspapers is right. I mean, this is just getting blanket coverage. And obviously, it's not just in the Irish media, but across the UK, the US, globally. It really is an incredible story, and all the more incredible that the Republican National Convention starts on Monday.
Yeah.
So all of the focus right now, and that is key here, because the focus has to be, if you look at the last two elections, focus has to be on the other candidate. Candidates are not generally liked at the moment, especially in the US presidential elections. It's not like the Obama era, where there were these real positive campaign stories. Yeah. Now it's all about the focus being on the other candidate. And for Biden, unfortunately, all the focus has been on him, and for all the wrong reasons. But what's making the headlines this morning is the donors. And that really is key, because we know the role money plays.
Follow the money.
Absolutely. And they're talking at the moment, and this is certainly in one of the headlines today, that one of the super PACs, these are these huge groups that raise massive collective amounts of money, Future Forward, the biggest Biden super PAC, are going to withhold up to $90 million in funding unless Biden steps down from the race. And really, this feels like there's been a lot of key critical moments. This feels like yet another.
Yeah. Linda, one Democratic councillor said that Biden's introduction of Zelensky was like introducing Churchill as Hitler. Like the gaffe was that serious. It was that big. And then the second gaffe came later in the press conference, which he didn't refute. And there was scenes of Democratic, you know, media handlers with their head in their hands.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's car crash after car crash. I couldn't actually bring myself to watch the debate. I think I watched about 30 seconds. And
You feel for the man as a human, don't you? As you know, I certainly do, in a guy that he's clearly past his best. And it's just, it's almost uncomfortable to watch him destructing before our eyes.
Yeah, and I mean, George Clooney's op-ed was really strong. And somebody said in the papers today, there's always a lot of celebrity endorsements, but this was a celebrity assassination.
Yeah.
And I suppose the thinking is that George Clooney wasn't speaking for himself. He was speaking for a lot of powerful people. And, you know, he bigged up Joe Biden, but he just tried to appeal to this thought that if you step out now, you will help save democracy. And I think Joe Biden, the people close to him, Jill and Hunter, need to kind of sit him down and say enough is enough, really.
But Stephen, he appears to be digging in, you know, and I don't know if there's some, you know, stage management going on here or some optics, but certainly from what we can see, he's digging in and saying, I'm not quitting, and I'm the man to beat Trump. And it's looking, as the hours go by, it's looking increasingly less likely that he's going to be the man standing against Trump, is it not?
It is, but pride comes before a fall, and we know this. And, you know, regardless, I suppose, of what ultimately happens here, he's the sitting president, and this is unprecedented. And you can understand maybe why he feels so strongly about this. But to Linda's point, there has to be people who are close to him now who step in and really just kind of take charge to an extent, because it's much bigger than the candidate. We're talking about the candidate here, but ultimately, like you said, democracy is kind of on the line. We have a very recent memory of what a Trump presidency was like. And we mustn't forget, too, that while this is a US political story, it could have significant ramifications for the Irish economy.
Absolutely.
If Trump takes over the White House.
Speaking of that, Linda, confident Republicans gear up for King Trump's coronation. So there's the Republicans seem to have a bit of pep in their step. Lots of talk about who's going to be the vice president.
Yeah, and, you know, people are saying they've never seen a quieter Trumper. You know, Trump has been so quiet in the last week. He's just letting the Democrats eat themselves. But yeah, the committee, as they call it, and this is quite scary, he calls it the Trump National Committee. And all the Republicans have rode in behind this and they're happy to kind of bow down to their leader, it seems. But yeah, lots of kind of, you know, DeSantis may be mentioned, you know, as a possibility. But no sign of any of his detractors on the ticket.
Yeah, and then every day a different message. Make America wealthy again. Make America safe again. Make America great. Make America strong. My God, it goes on. Okay, we'll watch this space. Let's move to more matters closer to home. Stephen, the economy shrank by more than estimate, despite positive conditions. And again, I have another story here is, you know, depending on how you look at these numbers, you can interpret things, you know, your own way, basically, because of the way statistics, they don't tell us lies. We know that.
They don't, but you have to be very careful when considering them. And there is, you know, in one way, I don't want to oversimplify the story and I don't want to take away from the seriousness of it, but there is one easy explanation around this decrease. And really, it comes down to one specific industry, and that's pharma. So we'll think back to 21 and 22 when COVID-related exports were so high. The world needed Ireland critically, amongst a range of other countries, to be these mega producers and mega exporters of product. Ireland stepped in, did that. The economy benefited from an export point of view to an incredible effect. It was understandable that in 2023 we were going to see a fall off in that. And that is one of the key reasons here. And it's ultimately a positive, right? We're not talking really about COVID at all in the ways we were. But from an export point of view, the economy suffered as a result in 2023.
Yeah. Two paragraphs that jumped out to me, Linda, were overall the multinational dominated sector contracted by 16.2%. The first time it has shrunk since 2013. That was number one. The second one being that last year, those businesses accounted for 46.6% of total value added in the economy, compared with 52.5% in 2022. So, it indelibly stamps our reliance on the multinationals.
It does, but in positive news, the companies that are focused on the domestic sector actually improved.
Sure.
Percentage-wise. So a lot of people would argue that we have an over-reliance on the multinationals. So perhaps this is maybe a positive shift towards it.
Stephen, just going back to the how we interpret statistical data, you know, there's GNI, there's MDD, but I think MDD, that being modified domestic demand, is probably the best one on the basis that it strips out the farmers and the multinational exports, and that grew by 2.6%.
It did, and you know, Cancelin breaks this down as kind of as they always do each week in the Times. And there's a really key line for me in this, which is that despite the kind of the drop off in the pharma sector, we now have an economy that's at full employment, and there's rising consumer spending. Those are two really key markers when we look at the success. And while we can't expect that to last forever, you got to focus on those as signs that the economy is in a good place.
Sure. Linda, moving on to the UK, just interesting to see the bounce the Labour Party getting. Rachel Reeves out of the blocks, saying she's going to sort out the housing, fixing the foundations, as she calls it, of the economy. And Cliff Taylor pointing out here in today's Times that maybe we could learn something from across the water.
Yeah, Cliff makes a very few good points in it. So yeah, so Labour have hit the ground running. They're getting their act together. They're focusing on planning. They want to kind of attract international investment into the housing sector in Ireland. All the bodies, IBEC, they've all been out recently, kind of even the IDA, warning about complacency and the amount of time it takes for the Irish government to do anything or Irish bodies to do anything. And there's this kind of, I feel there's a growing fear that we're losing investment because of it.
Yeah.
I mean, I sat down, IBEC had a briefing there a couple of weeks ago, and it was kind of worrying. And it was just the day after, a couple of days after, we had a story in the Sunday Times about Novo Nordisk cancelling their plans. Now, so Novo Nordisk are the makers of Ozempic.
Yeah.
They were going to build a big, huge factory in Grange Castle in Clondalkin. And they cancel it. Now, they haven't said why. Shortly after they confirmed to the Sunday Times that they were pulling out of Dublin, they announced that they were going to build in America. So you kind of have to wonder what happened there.
Yeah, and that's an interesting story. Stephen, just interesting to see reference to Apple and Athenry taking 4 years. You know, one clear distinction between the UK economy and our economy is, as pointed out by Cliff Taylor, is that we have surpluses, they don't. So we have some money to spend here.
We do. And the key thing here is speed and certainty. They're the two things that the UK, the new Labour government, seem to be focused on. And the point is made about all the missed deadlines in relation to the planning bill in Ireland. I think the worrying quote from this piece from Cliff Taylor for me is from the IDA, who obviously cheerlead Ireland, and understandably so, all the time, talk about how great a place it is and have this key goal of attracting foreign direct investment. The quote, high energy costs are severely impacting FDI growth prospects. When that's coming from the IDA, I think that is, you know, and Cliff Taylor makes the point, it's a red flag.
Yeah.
That's the kind of thing you have to kind of stand up and notice.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll watch this space with interest. I know the pilots dispute is settled, but just some interesting comment around maybe related matters, that will pilots successfully pay claim embolden others and result in more strikes. I just thought this was an interesting piece today because I suppose contamination here could be problematic, Linda.
Yeah, Martin Wall in the Irish Times, he kind of sets it out a lot. So just he first of all starts talking about initially about Aer Lingus itself. So while the pilots now have gotten their pay increase, you have cabin crew and baggage handlers who set clauses into their contracts that when they set out in 2022, that if the pilots got an increase above 12,
they could come back to the table.
They could come back to the table.
Yeah.
So you'd wonder whether IAG were worried about that. However, he does go on to say that because of the way that the pilots' increase is laid out, that it could be quite different. So they may not actually, while the headline figures may show that they're getting 17%, they it may not actually be 17%.
I think the critical thing is the 4 year versus 3 years.
Yeah.
And how that's played out. Stephen, pilots complain inflation left them worse off, but so did everyone else has been hit hard too.
Yeah.
So, but they seem to have got themselves a bit of a result, probably against the run of play.
They have. And, you know, again, Cliff Taylor sets out kind of those trends in real earnings from 2010 through to 2024. And, you know, he kind of makes the point that between 2015 and 2020, because inflation was so low, that actually wages didn't have to increase dramatically.
Yeah.
To actually keep employees kind of ahead of the curve in terms of the economy. But that high inflation in 22 and 23, that's really put much greater pressure on salaries. Now, again, there's kind of some positive news here. Professor Michael O'Doherty from Maynooth University makes the point that this is actually really unusual, that we don't have a history of strike action like this in Ireland, certainly in the last kind of 15 to 20 years. It's a private sector company, and that these large scale stoppages are even rarer. So while it's obviously a massive impact on anyone whose flights have been impacted in this case, thankfully, it's something that we shouldn't see kind of replicated too often.
Yeah. Linda, I don't know if you've got a blue tick, but there's some blue checks on Musk's X. They're deceptive, says the EU.
Yes. So X, or Twitter, as I still call it, because I'm very old fashioned, it could be facing fines of up to 6% of its revenue.
Because, which would be a massive sum, wouldn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah,
yeah.
It would. Of course, Musk didn't take it lying down. He came out and started tweeting, accusing the EU of all sorts of trying to suppress freedom of expression. I do think they are. I think I'd agree with the EU. I think they are misleading. I think you kind of see a blue tick. And so as well, when people get paid for engagement, so those who kind of get on and try to be angry now, I think since he bought it, X is a very different place, and I don't use it as much as I did, you know.
Yeah. Well, he has changed things, I suppose, not all for the best, in the best interests of his customers. Stephen, what do you make of this?
Yeah, I think this is interesting on a couple of different levels. I mean, they talk about the fact that back in the day, blue checks used to mean trustworthiness and that they were a trustworthy source of information. If you think about other industries, you know, like the guilds, for example, when a tradesperson has that stamp of approval.
But if you can go and buy that,
exactly,
it kind of dilutes its integrity.
If you can buy the plaque that's outside your restaurant with a star in it, really, does it have any value at all? And this is the point that's kind of being made here. And the problem is when you have a history of that kind of mark meaning one thing and then it changes into something else, that's concerning. It's also really interesting to note the role that Ireland is going to play here, because obviously X or Twitter, they have their European HQ in Dublin. That brings in the Commissioner Naman. And while this investigation started prior to Commissioner Naman coming into existence, in the future, it's definitely going to play a key role. And we're very familiar with the Data Protection Commissioner and their office and the role they play with technology companies. This is another Irish body that I think we're going to see increasingly play a role
in Europe. Absolutely. Yeah, which is probably no bad thing from an Irish perspective. I don't know if you've got solar energy panels on your roof, Linda, but Eamon Ryan is celebrating from the rooftops because there's 100,000 rooftops that now have so-called solar microgenerators connected to the electricity network. And I have to say, 100,000 units, this is a good news story.
Yeah, it's a good milestone to have reached. Yeah. I don't have solar panels, unfortunately. I feel a bit left out.
They're too dear.
We have.
But I think, it's a good story. And it just goes to show how far the actual technology has come, because you don't actually need sun for solar panels to work anymore.
So yeah.
Even if we continue to have a rainy summer, they'll still continue to do their job. But yeah, it kind of shows the shift towards us getting greener as a country, really.
Yeah. Stephen, you have solar panels, you say. Does your experience replicate what Eamon Ryan is saying here?
Absolutely. Probably one of the most positive things we did in the last 2 or 3 years in terms of our house. Now, we've a kind of a small semi-detached house, so our roof space is actually quite small. And we've got one of the smallest arrays or groups of panels. You can get only 5. And really the question was, well, if you've any less than 4, it's not worth it. You have to have a certain amount to actually generate. But the really interesting experience for us is you get paid for your surplus.
Yeah.
So as well as it powering our appliances during the day, especially during the summer, one of those long, bright days, it's at the other times of the year, maybe when you're not using it up, that you're being paid to get it back. So I think a key thing for listeners, hopefully today, is look into the grants that are available, because they're key. You're right, they are expensive, but there are excellent grants and incentives available. And given the rate you get paid when they buy your electricity back now, it doesn't take many years to get a return on that investment.
Yeah. Yeah, I looked at it in my own case, and I was looking at 20 years plus. Now, maybe I didn't investigate it properly, but, I was saying that's a lot of ESB bills between now and then to make up the difference.
For us, it'll be 6.
Yeah.
So within 6 years, we'll have the investment return because, as I say, there's a grant that's available. Often your electricity supply company will also kind of have incentives. There are lots of things that are available to the public if they want to invest in this. I think, again, a staggering statistic here is they're doing 750 new applications a week.
Yeah.
One thing is, I'd say there's, it's not the kind of thing you can turn around and get done today or tomorrow, but it's a good thing to think about now, even if you're thinking about it in the next year.
Yeah, very interesting. Linda, I don't know if you're a regular tipper when you go for your cup of coffee, but Adrian Weckler has an interesting piece in the review section of today's Independent, really about the digital implications now of the cashless society and where it helps, particularly for people working in the service industry, and how they may or may not get tips.
Yeah, so I mean, one of the common things now is you go to pay and it asks you, do you want to give 10, 15, 20%? And I suppose I'd kind of side with Adrian here in thinking, you know, there are times I panic. I never panic about whether I'm going to give a tip. I'm very generous, but I panic about what I should give. Interestingly, he does talk about, where the money actually goes. Now, I know that my daughter works in an ice cream shop, and when people tap to give tips, a percentage of that goes to the technology company.
Right.
They don't actually get it. So, she's saying, well, if you're getting a euro, we won't see any.
Well, that might be the cost of, the installation of the equipment.
Yeah. Yeah.
And maybe as long as you know what that is, maybe that's okay.
Yeah. But I suppose
as long as the owner isn't taking it.
Well, no. So the owner's not. But,
yeah.
But they'd prefer cash, let's just say.
Well, what I always do is when I think it's interesting here, because restaurants and coffee shops, like lots of coffee shops, are self-service. So when you're presented with an option I think to give a tip in a self-service scenario, sometimes that can be questionable. But I always, in a restaurant, I always pay the bill by credit card and I give the tip in cash because I just, it separates it and I hope that that person actually ends up keeping it.
I think what makes you possibly the exception there is the fact that you're carrying cash in the first place.
Yeah.
I think increasingly for consumers, when they visit premises, they don't even have a wallet with them anymore. They just have their phone because everything sits there. So it's definitely a challenge. If you're in the services industry and you rely on tips, the digitization of that process makes life more difficult.
Yeah. You're probably a bit like the guy in the Quentin Tarantino movie, Stephen, Reservoir Dogs, Mr. Pink. Do you remember him when he argued that the to his fellow mobsters that it was the guy was just doing his job?
Yeah, that's me sitting around the table with all the big wigs. Yeah, I mean it is kind of interesting when you think about the change in this over the last kind of 5 to 10 years. And you know, we do often talk about the fact that it's so much more convenient now to be able to pay and to tap and all those kind of things. But there is absolutely a sector of society who for a very long time, and they talk, you know, Weckler makes the point here about the US economy and the importance of tipping there and how it's entered into the Irish industry. But critically, one of the key roles it plays is it ensures a really high standard of service. Now, I know we'd all like to just expect it to happen, but there's no doubting that if tips are on the line, you're going to go that extra mile. You're going to put in that extra effort.
But as somebody who's worked in the service industry in the States, the major difference is that if you're in the States and you're working as a waiter, you're working for yourself and you're maybe distributing some of your tips to your busboy or the fella on the wash up or whoever it is. So it's a very different landscape than where you've got collective pool tips. You know, the guy who doesn't really care or give the service can still be enriched.
Yeah, and I think it probably comes down again to individual business owners, right? You know, you've got to set up a system whereby, you know, good work is rewarded. And I think it's possible to do that even in a digital situation.
Linda, I was a bit disturbed by an article on page 3 in the Daily Mail today. Heatwave hopes dampened by a grim July forecast. It really is awful, our weather, isn't it?
Oh, yes, it is. It's like it has been extremely depressing, I have to say, over the last few weeks. It's just 2 days, you know. A couple of years ago, I got my back garden done and I did the patio. And I was trying to think how many days have I actually sat out in that patio on like this week. I mean, this summer, I'd say it's probably 1 day. That's all I've had a chance. Because when I'm out there, usually I'm cutting the grass. So kind of
different purpose. Well, the forecast is reasonably good today here in Dublin and tomorrow. Stephen, I don't know, I do get despondent over the weather?
Well, I was in Croke Park last Sunday to watch Cork on a momentous occasion.
I knew you'd get that in.
The sun split the stone. So I hope that the big games in the GAHQ get good weather this weekend because it really does make for a good spectacle.
Very finally to you, Linda. Yours for 5 million, a beast from our Jurassic past. What's happening here?
So, so it's the Daily Mail. And if you have a 5 million euro spare, you can buy this huge, ginormous bone structure of a dinosaur.
Sure, why wouldn't you?
The name, it's an Apatosaurus. Is that right, do you reckon? But unfortunately, that back garden I was talking about isn't big enough to hold it.
Apatosaurus, Stephen, there you go. That's a new one for you. Yeah, going cheap at 5 million.
And what's interesting is you're seeing people now buying up tracts of lands in the US, speculating like they would have done with oil in the past on the idea that there might be skeletons there and hoping they discover the next 5 million euro fossil.
There you go. You heard it here first, folks. Big thanks to my business panel, Linda Daly, business reporter with the Sunday Times, and Stephen O'Leary of Politico. Thank you very much for a great review of the business stories.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11 on News Talk.